Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
How's it going, everyone? My name is Dave, and I want to welcome you to episode 41 of the Think Orange podcast. Today, I am joined by my amazing co-host, Ashley.
Hey!
How are you today?
I'm good. I can't believe this is episode 41.
It's insane, isn't it?
It is.
It is incredible. You'd think they would have done something to improve the bunker between episode one, but we'll see what they can do like throughout this year. Hey, today, we have a fantastic episode coming up, but before we get into that, I want to ask you, this is the first time I've seen you since New Year's. How was your New Year's?
It's going wonderful.
Yeah.
2018 has started out great.
Are you, do you feel organized? Are you super busy? Are you, how are things going in your world?
Well, I just spent the first 2 weeks of this year in Ethiopia.
Nice.
So the last 2 weeks, I've been trying to get back on this time zone because they're 8 hours ahead, as you know, when you go home to Australia.
Yeah.
So it was a great way for me to start the year because it's really helped me refocus as to why I do what I do, why I love what I do, and just reminded me of so many things.
That's so good. I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so glad that you are back here with us. We always miss you when you are not around.
Thank you, Dave.
Did you go with a bunch of volunteers or what? Who'd you go with?
I did. I brought 15 people with me for the first week, and then I stayed the second week by myself. I help, for those of you who don't know, I help run a ministry in Ethiopia called Carry 117. And so I travel there about twice a year.
So you must do a lot about mobilizing volunteers and recruiting volunteers to go on those trips with you.
We do. And we try to mobilize them not only to go on the trip, but for when they come back, they do something with the experience.
Which is super important. I think that gets left behind in a lot of these sorts of trips.
There are so many logistics that go into actually going on a trip, but the hardest work is when you come back and actually have to apply it to what you do.
Do you enjoy working with volunteers?
I do. I love it.
Yeah.
I was a volunteer before I was ever on staff at a church for years and years.
Yeah.
And so I loved it from that perspective. And then I know as a ministry leader, we never, ever could have done anything in ministry without the volunteers.
So true. And the reason I'm asking you these questions is today we are talking all about volunteers and how we can recruit them and how we can mobilize them. So this is going to be a really significant episode for anybody who's in church ministry, student ministry, kids ministry, family ministry, because as you said, all runs on volunteers, right?
It's true.
It rises and falls on volunteers in so many ways. So today we are going to be hearing from Mr. Adam Duckworth. Adam is the lead communicator at Downtown Harbor Church in Florida and may be the best dressed man I think I've ever seen.
He is always walking out of a catalog, it looks like.
I think it's a three-way.
Do they make catalogs?
I don't think they do that anymore.
But you know what I mean. The reference. He walks off a billboard. We'll say that.
Do they make billboards anymore?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a tie between him, Karen Newhoff, and Dan Scott.
Ooh.
Don't you think?
Interesting.
If you've ever been to Orange Conference, if you've heard any of those three men speak, I mean, they are some well-dressed men right there.
They always appear at their best.
They certainly do. They are sharp-dressed men, aren't they?
Sharp. The shop dressed men.
I was pitching you a song there and you didn't even take it, but
I don't even know the song.
Our producers do, so we're good. Hey, he's going to be talking about what it means to mobilize volunteers to accomplish your mission. And then we're also going to be hearing from Christine Kreischer. Ash, can you tell us a little bit about who she is, what she does?
Yeah, you know, she's the co-author of an amazing book called Stop Recruiting, Start Retaining, which was extremely influential for me in the way that I approached volunteerism.
Yeah.
She's also the family pastor at GT Church in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And she's going to be giving some practical tips on discovering the secret to recruiting volunteers. So we're going to be talking about the secrets of recruiting volunteers, followed by the secrets of mobilizing volunteers, which really, if you've got volunteers, they're the two most important parts of the volunteers, right?
Right. And they also take up all of your time to prepare them to do both of those things.
But if you
can
do them well, you know what you're able to do on the back end?
Absolutely.
You are able to love and celebrate your volunteers. So I want everybody to break out that Moleskin, break out the penultimate app on your tablet or whatever device
you're
using.
I don't even know what you're talking about right now.
These are note-taking devices. Get ready to take some notes. Make sure you have a pen handy or your Apple Pencil, if you will, and make sure that you're ready to take notes, because there is going to be some great practical information out of this podcast. And you know where else there's some great practical information now that I think of it?
Tell us.
The Orange Conference.
Yes, there is a lot of great information at the Orange Conference.
And the Orange Conference is the lucky sponsor of today's episode. Now, the Orange Conference is a three-day conference in Atlanta, Georgia, for your entire family ministry team. Ash, what are we going to be talking about at Orange Conference this year?
Yeah, Orange Conference 2018's theme is called One Voice, where the whole idea behind it is we can do more together. So if you want to realign your team, increase your influence, communicate more clearly with one end in mind, the Orange Conference 2018 is where your whole team wants to be.
And here's the great thing. You can learn more about it at theorangeconference.com. Plus, if you go to theorangeconference.com, you can also enter to win two free tickets to the Orange Conference. That's pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
And you can only find that out through this podcast, so make sure you share this around with everybody else.
And if you're the one who wins the tickets, you have to come find us.
Oh, if they win the tickets, maybe they could actually get on the podcast. Let's do that.
That would be so fun.
Let's do that.
I'm sure our producer Kevin's fine with that.
Well, our producer Kevin is tapping on the window, the little portal window that we have for him, and he's like giving us the shaking of the head. But you know what?
Strength in numbers.
We're going to do this. We're going to do this. If you win the two free tickets, we're going to have you on this podcast to tell your story about the podcast and about your church and about your ministry. So make sure you do that right now. Go over to theorangeconference.com. Make sure you fill out the details there. And once you've done that, I want you to hashtag OC18 and
hashtag Think Orange.
And tell us that you just entered to win so that we can make sure we track you and get you on this podcast.
Love it.
Hey, we've spoken probably enough, haven't we?
Yes, let's get into it.
Let's get straight into it. I'm going to get Ashley to sing a little bit later on in this episode, but we're going to throw it straight over to Christine now. Take it away.
You a little bit about that. My husband and I have been self-employed pretty much all of our lives. We have had a cafe for over 22 years. We also have a residential redevelopment company. And so the furthest thing from my mind was that I would ever be a pastor. Anybody relate to that? Or I'd ever be on staff at a church, or I would ever even volunteer in a church. If you knew my background, I've been in ministry now for 17 years. And every time I think about it, I laugh. Half of those years as a volunteer, a high-level volunteer, and half of those years as a full-time staff member. But I always said I would never, ever, two things. I would never work for anybody else, and I would never, ever work at the church. And for a lot of years, I felt like I was unqualified to even be in a church. I didn't grow up in church, actually very, very far from it. We lived in Florida, and my stepfather was a drug smuggler for organized crime. Yay. Fun childhood. Lots of dysfunction. But seriously, I mean, there was a lot of dysfunction, and there was a lot of brokenness inside of me. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that someone led me to Jesus and showed me what it meant to follow him. And then it was a couple of years later that somebody introduced me to GT Church, where I serve now. And I sat in the back for a couple of years and just hid, because I was hurting and I was a mess. And every time I heard we need volunteers, or I would hear people talk about, I would sit back, I would shrink, and I would say, not me. They don't want me. Oh no, I'm so disqualified. And can I just say this to you? Sometimes we make assumptions of volunteers, or sometimes we, I shouldn't say volunteers, of people that are sitting in the pews or sitting in the chairs, and we think, you don't care. Clearly you don't care. Or you're lazy, or you're too busy. And the truth is, so many times, that's not the case. Because busy people get things done, right? So that's so many times not true. I was very busy. I had 3 little boys at home. I had 2 businesses, and I was busy. But somebody tapped me on the shoulder, and they said, Christine, you are great with kids. And I went, I don't think so. But I did love kids, because I did have this, kind of dream inside of me or this aspiration inside of me to be for somebody else who I never had when I was growing up. And so I had that, but I felt so, so disqualified to do that. And so when they said that to me, I thought, okay. And they said, and you like to cook. And so we need someone to cook with kids on a Wednesday night. And so come. And I said, all right, I can cook with kids. I'm not going to teach them. I'm just going to cook with them. And I did that for probably several months. And then God began to just download inside of me, like, I've called you to this. You've got a purpose. Live it. Dig in. And so I was stuck. I mean, like, in a good way, stuck. I was like, this is it. I love this. And there are a lot of people that are sitting in the chairs, in the pews, whatever you call them, at your church who are just waiting for you to tap them on the shoulder, waiting for someone to tap them on the shoulder and to believe in them. When Andy said this morning that the church saved his life, I wanted to just jump out of my seat because I can see that too. And we all have different stories in this room. Everybody has a story. But somebody leaned into my story and believed in me enough and gave me opportunities to be a part of something so much bigger than myself. And it's why I am who I am today. It's why I am the mom I am today and the wife that I am today. And it's, man. And I think, what if that never happened? What if someone made assumptions of me and robbed me of those opportunities? I can't even imagine where my life would be today. So I'm so thankful. I'm so passionate about this. That's why Darren and I wrote this book, The Volunteer Project, Stop Recruiting, Start Retaining, because I am so incredibly passionate about churches getting this right, because if the church doesn't get it right, who's going to? It's like what Andy said this morning. If not you, who? And I'm assuming that if you're in this room right now, it's because you maybe experience a little bit frustration about needing volunteers, right? And when you're in survival mode, I told you, 17 years I've been in ministry, and probably the key role for me has been recruiting, equipping volunteers, and developing leaders. So I get it. I know what it's like to have Sundays coming. Right? That's a very, very real feeling. And you're in survival mode. It's just like, I just got to fill the holes. I just need a warm body or bodies, right? But if you don't change something, the secret to recruiting is retention. It's creating an irresistible volunteer culture. When we say stop recruiting, it just means we don't ever want to stop recruiting, that we want people to experience the opportunities that we have. But it means now, because you've created such an irresistible volunteer experience, your volunteers are doing the recruiting for you. Excellence is contagious. It's attractive. And people are sticking and they're talking about it. And then the side benefit we'll talk about in a little bit is the leaders that emerge. Because sharp people, leaders, are attracted to excellence. And they just rise up. And guess what happens for you? Your job gets a whole lot easier. But you got to do the work now, right? It's almost like you got to pause, and that's hard when you're busy. I get that. But I promise you, we're going to talk about four strategies today. And if you begin to implement these strategies, and I can't go into all of them, like I won't go through every detail. The book has tons and tons of practical steps. But here's what I want you to hear me say. Either way, you're going to pay. So you can pay now and be intentional and make some changes now. Or you can continue to pay by having that revolving door. People coming in, recruiting, recruiting, recruiting. And as a business owner, I can tell you, I learned this early on, that it takes so much more time, energy, money to get a new customer. Did I say energy? To get a new customer than it does to just create an irresistible experience for customers and then keep the ones you have. That's just a principle that applies in business, but it's also a principle that applies to volunteer retention. You exhaust yourself by constantly having to recruit, 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 recruit. But there's some things that you can do really well and get right so that volunteers stick and they do the recruiting for you. If you haven't read Ephesians 4 in a while, I encourage you to do that. Our job as leaders is not to do the work of the ministry, but it's to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry. People that experience empowerment say, I'm trusted and I have opportunities to develop into a better leader. We don't make assumptions, right? So this strategy focuses on establishing clear vision and parameters within our volunteer teams. This is so super important because when we don't do this, they create their own, guys. And then we sometimes wonder why volunteers go rogue. Why did you do it like that? Because you didn't give them what they needed. You didn't set the framework and give them the framework and then set them free. Or maybe you did. Maybe you gave them a little bit and you said, this is what I want you to do, but then you took it back because you're a control freak. I can be a control freak, so I can say that. We don't want to micromanage because that devalues. That sends a message and says, you can't do what I've asked you to do, clearly. So when we set the framework and we give them the parameters and then set them free, they go, yeah, they feel empowered. We challenge leaders to not make assumptions for their volunteers, but invite individuals into opportunities that will stretch them beyond what they've done in the past. We make assumptions. We think people are too busy. We think they don't have the time. And you know what? Bill Hybels always says the number one challenge with volunteerism is being under-challenged. Being under-challenged. Sometimes we think, oh, I'm asking you too much, and we make assumptions, and we rob people. Let me show you a picture of Jeanette, and we'll close with this. Jeanette, she's normally here with me at Orange, and this year she couldn't come. She's one of my high-level volunteers for over 10 years now. When she came to our church, someone introduced me to her, and she came in to test drive in the environment where I was serving. I was intimidated by Jeanette because she was awesome. And if we're being real, have you ever met that person? And you think, oh, what if they're better than me? Right? Because we're human. And so I had that feeling and I thought, oh gosh, I don't know. And God said, get out of the way. What if she is better than you? You should want her to be better than you. And so we just began to pour into Jeanette and give her opportunities and not make assumptions. And the more we gave her, the more she would come back and say, Christine, give me more, give me more. And then she goes away on a missions trip to Africa. And when she comes back, she writes us a letter and says, thank you so much. I have a great job. She's a VP of marketing for one of the largest engineering firms in the country. And she says, I love my job. Doesn't aspire to be on staff, not one bit. But she said, but because of what you've allowed me to do and experience, I found my purpose in life. I found meaning. We gave Jeanette a framework. We gave her the parameters, but then we set her free and we said, we cut the red tape. We said, here you go. Go. Do it your way. And because of that, in Africa, she led hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people to the Lord. And then she came back to the States and she began to apply the principles because we're always adding value to people's lives, giving them opportunities to grow and stretch in every area. Now she's one of the most sought after speakers at engineering conferences around the country. She tried to quit her job and they begged her to stay, let her make her own schedule and paid her more money. And she says it is directly linked to the skills that she learned in the church. Because what we do on Sunday needs to impact Monday and Tuesday and the rest of the week, right? And she's living her passion. She's living her purpose. She's living her calling because of the church. Let it be said of us that we were the conduit that allowed people to say, the church saved my life. It's that important.
Okay, here I am in the Think Orange bunker. Once again, we've placed this bunker on wheels and we've moved it all the way from Atlanta out to Austin so that we could sit down with the one and only Adam Duckworth. Adam, how are you, man?
The one and only. I've never been called that
have
before.
Have you not ever been
called? No, that's the first time, but
come
it made
on,
me feel
your
very
good. One and only must have called you her one and only at some point.
My wife?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, no, she likes to keep me humble, so I would never be... I would never be called the one and only by her. Even though I probably am, I would never be called that. So
I don't know if probably is good there.
That's, yeah, it's, yeah, for sure. No, but thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we are so glad. We know that you're a longtime friend of the pod. But for people who don't know who you are, maybe haven't seen you speaking around on the Orange Tour, give us the skinny on who you are, what you do, et cetera, et cetera.
Great. So I have, been around Orange for almost 11 years.
Wow.
I have been working with Reggie and Colette and the gang for quite a long time. And I've been a part of Camp Kid Jam and Orange Tour and working with Sue Miller, writing Not Normal and talking about volunteering and all kinds of things under the sun for a long time now. But I've been honored and blessed to be a part of it. It's been a really cool road.
But you don't just do stuff for Orange as well?
No. I don't. Orange is
tell us about the other half of your life.
So I'm a church planter. So 2 years ago, just about 2 years and 2 months ago, we started Downtown Harbor Church in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Nice.
We are a church plant that meets in a kids' science museum. So we are very unique. It is probably the most unique thing that I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
But it's been a really cool road. I also own a business. So I am a travel agency owner, which is interesting because a lot of people think the world of the travel agent is dead. And we say contraire. Mm. And we specialize in all things Disney. And so I started that about 6 years ago, too.
That is awesome. So you do a lot of writing. You do a lot of communicating. Mm-hmm. And specifically, you had mentioned Sue Miller. I want to jump in there.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the book that you wrote with her, because that's really what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah,
Not the
book, but the topic. Yeah, okay. I met Sue Miller.
Who's incredible.
If you want to be cheered up, you go to Sue Miller.
100%.
And she could tell you, like, you're wearing the ugliest shirt in the world, but you'd go away from the conversation feeling good about yourself. You'd be like, that woman just made me feel really good. That's how great of a person she is. She's so warm. She's such a great spirit to so many. I met Sue in Ohio in like 2006, probably right around the time I started working with Orange, just before that. And Sue and I had a friendship, and we decided that about 3 years ago, it was time to write two volunteers. And then we wrote a companion piece. And that first book we wrote to volunteers was called Not Normal, because we believe volunteers are just not normal. People who choose to give their lives to something that is bigger than themselves for free are just not normal. And then we wrote a companion piece to Those Who Lead Volunteers a year later, and that's been out. And so we just love all things volunteering. And for me, Aussie Dave. Can I call you Aussie Dave?
You can.
Great. Fantastic.
Please do. I prefer it.
Why I'm so passionate about this is because my career in the local church, I started as a volunteer.
Yeah.
I have no seminary degree, no formal training inside a denomination. I was simply a volunteer who worked with kids and then led volunteers. And that's the only thing I've ever done. And that's why I love it so much.
So volunteering obviously has had a huge impact on your life.
It has.
What was the first time the first job you had as a volunteer?
I was a small group leader for kindergarten and first grade boys. I started in February of 2001. And the first week there, I lost a kid.
What do you...
That's not true. That's very true. That's not true.
Lost how? There's a couple of different ways you could lose a kid.
His name was Caleb, and I'll never forget it. I had these like eight kids on the floor in a circle, and they were like, that's how you did small group, and we had activities. And all of a sudden, like, parents were coming in and starting to pick up, and I noticed that like this mom was approaching the group, and her eyes were kind of like, you know, like wider than normal. And she came up to me and said hi, and I said hello back, and she said, you're new here. She said, I'm here to claim my son Caleb. And I said, I'm sorry, ma'am, he appears to be missing. But he was in the next room hiding under a table with a black cloth over it because he didn't like the activity we were doing. So he asked to go to the restroom and never came back, and I didn't notice. That was my first week as a volunteer. And, you know, the rest is history. And that's a true story.
Where is Caleb now?
Caleb, the last time I saw him, he's got to be like early 20s, and he's studying aviation engineering in the Midwest.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, Caleb, if you are listening, we would love if you could like click on the show notes. We're going to leave Adam's contact details there. Wouldn't you love to get a tweet from Caleb?
Caleb's my Facebook friend. So like I've seen him like online recently. I don't know if he's listening to this podcast. He might be. That would be something. Regardless, he's quite the character.
He might be listening to it 10 years from now.
Wouldn't that be something?
So maybe he's made some great choices over the past decade.
Let's hope so.
So good on you, Caleb. Thanks for getting Adam. He's really the reason why you're here today. So we want to personally thank Caleb. Maybe we'll leave Caleb's contact details in the show notes as well. That would be hilarious.
I think that'd be good.
I would love that.
He'd benefit from that.
So here's what I want to know. When you first signed up to volunteer, what was the thing that was driving you to do that? What was the thing that prompted you?
Here's what was so interesting, and one of the things that Orange is talking about now in 2017 is these like preteen years. You know, we're talking about these years in a kid's life that's kind of like this in-between phase mm-hmm. between elementary and middle school. And it was actually the phase when I disengaged from church.
Right.
I did not ever participate in youth group as a teenager, even though I felt like I made wise decisions as a teenager and tried to be engaged with the local church from a perspective of going to church. But I never, ever got involved with groups or peers or anything. And then I just felt something pulling me as I was done with high school and kind of going out into the real world. And it was this thing called volunteering. And I didn't know why. I wanted to give back. And the rest is history. That's
So volunteering in your church was something mm-hmm. you just had a sixth sense for.
I mean, dare we not get too spiritual, but God was a part of that. You know, it was this idea that was in me in some way that I will never understand long ago that this was meant to be. That was something I was supposed to do. And I just believed, looking back on it all these years later, it was completely true and accurate. So
I'm wondering if there was something, an incident or something in your life that prompted you to sign up this one day to start this small group.
There was a volunteer service where a pastor stood on stage and I was the sucker who checked the card, you know, put it in the offering at the end of service. Little did I know that it would lead to what it's led to.
Yeah.
But it was this idea that, hey, we need people to sign up with to work with kids. And one of the things Sue and I talk about is you never recruit volunteers to need. You always recruit them to vision. Mm-hmm. So I signed up for the exact wrong reasons. They recruited me for the wrong reasons in our opinion. But for whatever reason, I got plugged in and then became a staff member at quarter time, half time, part time, whatever you call it, and eventually took over everything in that church. That's what it was.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, there are some people who out there in the world, I don't know if you've met any of them, who are against volunteering, though, who maybe require a little bit more coercing to get them to volunteer. You seem to have it inbuilt in you. What would you say to somebody who's like hesitant to volunteer for things at their church?
I would tell them that they need to volunteer not because it's in them or because it's in some way something that they need to do. I truly believe volunteering is the best thing that you could ever do for your local church and your community and for you.
Yeah.
And you don't get into it for you. You don't get into it thinking that, hey, I'm going to benefit from this. I'm going to build relationships with other volunteers or change lives or be a part of this different community. But those are all kind of side effects of volunteering. Yeah. I believe that volunteering at the end of the day, you need to get into because it is the best thing that you can actually do with your life outside of God and your family. I truly believe that.
Yeah. What are some of the misconceptions you have heard for why people don't volunteer?
They abuse me. They put me in places that they don't, or I'm not meant to be just to fill a hole. They will ask me to do more and more and more. There's many reasons to not volunteer because people have been taken advantage of by local churches. And those people, unfortunately, don't have any kind of strategy or desire to see individual volunteers win. It just is, they're just trying to plug holes and, you know, stop the water from leaking out of the bucket.
Yeah.
But really, when you get a volunteer in the right place and you get them positioned where they need to be, I truly believe it can be the best decision that they ever make with inside the local church.
So I want to circle back to the needs versus vision thing.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is the fundamental difference between asking people to sign up for a need and asking them to sign up for a vision?
So you come to me and you say, I want to volunteer.
Yeah.
And I say to you in response, thank you so much, Dave, because you have no idea how desperate we are for people. We haven't had someone in this room in months. Mm. We need someone here. I don't care if you know what you're doing or not. We just need you here.
Yeah.
No one wants to volunteer for that because that is just a need. I mean, not that you can't sign up to be responsible for the local church you're a part of, but no one wants to serve for desperation.
Yeah.
No one wants to follow a leader who's desperate for someone to be there.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference when someone says, like if you were to come to me and say, I want to volunteer, and I say in response, you know, that's good because we truly believe the best way for a kid to know God is to know someone who knows God.
Yeah.
And you're going to be a huge influence in the lives of these kids. And so therefore, not only would we love to have you, but this is going to make a big impact. There's a big difference between those two statements.
I'm in. Where do I sign up?
Oh, well, I have applications here in my bag. I'll get them out for you if you'd like to. Do you have a pen?
Here's what I want to ask you now. I want to put you into a scenario. There are people who are listening to this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I actually want to put you into a couple of scenarios.
Okay.
So there are people we know who are listening to this podcast who are middle school leaders at their church.
Like adults who lead middle schoolers.
Adults who lead middle school students.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a need. There are some holes in their schedule and they need to fill them. how would you go about advising them to pitch those needs, to pitch that vision to their church? I want you to do it though as if you're that person and you're going to pitch that need.
Well, first of all, allow me to say before I tell you my answer to that question that holes are going to exist for everyone, yep. generally. Yep. They're not bad. We're all going to have needs and volunteer holes and gaps. And so, first of all, it's okay to have those things. We want to make sure that those are filled. So filling those is not bad. What you just don't want to do is appear desperate, and that's yep. the only reason you're filling the position. How I would go about it is I would try to get some time at some level on a stage in front of people who yep. have the potential to volunteer. You call that a class, you call that a group, you call that Sunday morning service, you call that whatever it is, I don't know, at your church.
Yep.
If I had a microphone, I would stand up in front of a group of people and I would say, think back to when you were in middle school. And do you remember what it was like to go through what you went through in middle school? And don't you wish that you had somebody who was safe, who had your best interest at heart, that might come alongside you to deal with the things that you dealt with in middle school.
Mm.
That is why the kids who are in middle school need people who are going to speak into their lives, mm. not because there's holes, not because there's gaps, but because these moments are bigger than some of the other moments they'll experience. Yeah. Therefore, they need people alongside of them. Again, there's the word need, but it's a different kind of need.
Yeah, totally.
You're not leading toward, hey, help me fill my schedule. You're leading toward, look at the emotional and physical need that exists here in mm. the life of a kid. Mm. Don't you want to be a part of that? And yeah. at the end of the day, what we say is, it's not the middle schoolers who just win, even though we think that they do.
Yeah.
It's the volunteers who understand yeah. the impact that they're making as well.
That's great. Yeah. I would love if we could put that script, or almost write that script out in our show notes, because there yeah. are people who need that and don't really know how to say it, and you just expressed it so well.
The other thing I would say is that a lot of leaders that we've encountered are very, like, sweet people. They just don't have an appealing personality
yeah.
to recruit volunteers, yeah. and that's okay. That doesn't mean you can't be the leader. But whoever is standing up in front of people saying that, maybe it's not you who's over the department. Maybe it's a person above you. Maybe it's your boss. Maybe it's a senior leader. Maybe it's someone below you. I don't know what that looks like. It just needs to be the right person communicating it as well.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Okay, so the second scenario I want to put you into.
Okay, I love scenarios.
Is as a parent. A parent who understands that their teenage daughter, son needs to get more involved, or they want their teenager to get involved in the church a little bit more and want them to sign up to volunteer. What would you be saying to that parent? What should that parent be saying to their daughter or son?
If I had a teenager and they were involved at the local church,
yep.
I would, as the parent, say to them and to ministry leaders inside the church, that over any type of experience that my kid can have, volunteering and figuring out how to be the church is the most important experience that they can have, because we believe that if they figure out how to plug into and own their own faith,
yep.
meaning volunteering and serving when they're with us,
yep.
that they will go out and then be the church when they're no longer with us as well.
Mm.
We have consistent data and stories about kids, and specifically teenagers, who sign up to volunteer at a very young age, fourth grade even, when they plug in to go, they have understood what it means to be the local church. And therefore, when they leave the church at high school and go to college, go wherever they're at, that they actually go and continue that journey. We've heard of yeah. kids becoming staff members at churches and interns at churches because, not because they were spectators, but because they were volunteers.
Yeah.
And they understood what it meant to give back.
That's really good. I have three teenage daughters. Mm-hmm. 13.
Do you really?
I do.
Good for you.
13. Well, pray for me.
I will.
Three teenage daughters, I said.
Wow.
13, 14, and 17. And okay. all of them serve as volunteers in our church. And what they consistently say to us, and this is going to lead to a question. What they consistently say to us, it's their volunteer team where they feel like they belong the most.
Oh, man.
They have mm-hmm. small groups, like they attend middle school and high school, and they have small groups, but they say it's when they're serving that they feel like they belong.
In fact, that is what Sue and I are writing about next.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Community amongst volunteers, because chapter 4 of Not Normal and leading Not Normal volunteers is called You, Me, and We. And we say it's not about you It's not about me. It's how we do this together, but it's all centered in community.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing next is we're just kind of writing about, hey, how important this is to be a part of a community amongst people who are volunteering and whose hearts kind of beat the same way. They're passionate about the same thing. They get to do life together in a way that other people don't. And how unique and kind of this, even though we don't really like this like saying or title necessarily, but it's almost like the secret sauce to developing volunteers. Yeah. Like it's all about community because really, even though it's about serving in your position or the kids you lead or the supplies you prepare or the Bible story you tell, is it really? I mean, even though those are things you do and those are tasks, isn't it about the people you serve alongside and how you fit in and belong?
Yeah, that's so powerful. Hey, one of the things you write about is the quirks that great volunteers have. Now, for people who are listening, I just realized, didn't see me actually do the air quotes.
Okay, it's
but quirks. I air quoted around quirks.
You did.
You say that there are some common quirks that
seven of them.
Great volunteers have. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So when we started to look at volunteers who were not normal, and we started to, because they're not normal, because when they give their lives to something bigger than themselves for free,
they're no longer normal. Yeah.
So we were like, what are the common traits or characteristics amongst these people? And we couldn't call them traits or characteristics. We had to call them quirks because that's what they are. And so start somewhere. That's the first one. Small is big, meaning the smallest things that you do that you don't understand or realize actually have the biggest results.
Yeah.
The one that's been the most kind of adapted and most powerful, at least from what leaders have told us, is number three, which is own, don't rent. That we want people to approach their volunteering with an ownership mentality and not a renting mentality. Mm-hmm. Meaning that if you rent a car or rent a house, that you are not going to treat it the same as if you own something.
Yep.
And so if you put that mentality forward, the fourth quirk is you, me, and we. Meaning it's, as I just mentioned, not about you or me. It's how we do this together.
Yep.
Number five is honor the leader. Meaning that you have a responsibility to honor the leader above you as you follow after the vision that hopefully God has given their heart and their mind and this church. The sixth one is replace yourself. This idea that you will not be there someday.
Yep.
So wouldn't you want to leave a legacy helping the vision succeed long after you're gone?
Yep.
And the seventh one is you can't always see it. It's the idea that no matter how hard you try, more than likely you'll never be able to see the results of what you do here on earth.
Okay, so
all those to say, you can go back and you probably need to rewind that or get the book.
Get the book. We'll also have some, we'll have links to the book in the show notes as well.
Put the links up there. This needs to be out there.
It totally does. So here's what I'm picturing right now is as you went through those seven things, there were people in their cars driving along with their church t-shirts on because they're staff members of the church, cheering and going, yes, amen, praise Jesus. This is exactly what we want. But they're also in the back of their mind going, but how do we find somebody like that? How do you find those sort of people who are great volunteers? Do you find people who have those seven qualities?
I don't know that you find them. I think you have to mold them as well.
Mm.
I mean, I think that to say, I mean, rarely will you just pluck someone out of a crowd or throw a baseball into a crowd and hit someone who's got all that. It's our job as leaders to go, okay.
We do not recommend throwing baseballs into the crowd.
Well, yeah.
Just for legal reasons.
That's true. Yeah, legal reasons and ramifications, sure. But I also believe that you may have someone come in with a couple of those, but it's our job as leaders to go, okay. This is what we think somebody who's a not normal volunteer looks like now. How can we help you get there even better and do what you do even better? That's why we wrote the second book, because leaders said to us, hey, we love this book for volunteers. Yeah. What about me, the leader? How do I help them do this? So in the second book, we took those seven quirks and wrote out five practicals for each one of the seven quirks of how to do it as a leader.
And you need to buy the book to get that.
Well, I'm not giving that away for free.
That's fair enough.
Just kidding. No, I already gave the quirks away. Just kidding.
Give us the five then.
What of each one?
Can you give us
35?
Give us one.
Okay, here's one. So for small is big.
Yeah.
One of the things that we said is as a leader, you should pay the postage. And that's an example for a larger kind of metaphorical thing, but it's this idea, if you want your small group leaders or your volunteers to send cards to their kids that they lead or their teenagers for their birthdays or just to let them know they're thinking about them, you as the leader should pay the postage. Pay the 42 cents or whatever it is. Don't make them find the address and give them a roster list so they don't have to go searching for the address. But a lot of leaders don't think like that.
Yeah,
a lot of leaders go, okay, they'll Google it. They'll go to whitepages.com and find it. No, that's your job. That's why you get paid. Those high salaries.
There's a whitepages.com.
You didn't know it?
No.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's there. That's I can find you there right now.
That's amazing. Uh-huh. So what you're talking about, though, is you're talking about establishing a culture.
It's not just pay the postage. That's just one example. Yeah. This is a culture of you empowering them to understand that small is big.
Yeah.
It's the, and that's the way that leaders should lead their volunteers. I'll never forget when I was working in my last job, some people had said to me before, they go, you know, we don't see you, because that wasn't a traditional church and we were implementing the Orange strategy and it was just very different. And I had come into an environment that I was not familiar with, but they wanted me for that reason. And they said, you know, it's interesting because we don't see you a lot interacting with kids and families, because I was the kids and families director.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, that's right. And they said, so what do you do? I said, well, I interact with volunteers. I allow them to lead and I empower them to lead, and we're establishing a coaching structure so they can lead. And they were like, is that right? Is that good? And I believe it's the only way to lead if you're going to be successful.
Yeah, that's good.
But that's just me.
So what advice would you give to the young leader who's you know, maybe listening to this, and maybe this is the first time they've ever led a volunteer-dependent organizational group? What advice would you give them? That's practical, like one or two practical steps.
I would say, if I were going to advise a very young leader of volunteers, I would say two things. Number one, establish a coaching structure. A coaching structure is this structure in place where you give leadership away. So you would put a number of leaders around you who are volunteers who lead other volunteers. Mm-hmm. That's in the second book, The Leading Not Normal Volunteers, we outline the whole thing, but that's the first thing that made me a very successful young leader of volunteers. Yep. And then I would say too, at the end of the day, you have to realize that as much as you want to execute the curriculum and the Bible story and the task and the decor and the supplies, it's actually only really about one thing, and that's relationships. As it really is in life, and volunteering is no different.
Yeah, that's so powerful.
I hope so. Well, I'm trying.
Gosh. Hey, where do people go to get their hands on these two books?
They can go to Amazon. Yep. They can go to the Orange Store. I believe at orangestore.org. Yep. Is that the correct URL? I believe it is. Yeah, right?
Sure is. Well, they can go there. Our producer, Kevin, is tapping his little face up against the glass on the other side of the booth.
And you know what's interesting? I don't even know that people know this, because Sue and I don't promote it to the nth degree, but we do coaching for leaders of volunteers.
Okay.
We actually have a coaching program that lasts for 10 weeks. We do it about 3 times a year.
Yeah.
And so you can find that on our website at notnormalbook.com. Slash coaching. And that's a big deal, because we take leaders through this 10-week course of how to actually practically do this, and they get access to us, and we do an hour a week on a mobile meeting platform, and there's a closed Facebook group where they interact together, and it's been a really cool time. We've done 3 groups already, and it's just been awesome.
Yeah. So, I would encourage everybody who's listening to this who wants to build a volunteer culture at your organization or your church to make sure, give us that website again.
It's notnormalbook.com.
/coaching. Coaching, because Adam and Sue are A, phenomenal people, B, super passionate about this, but C, they are so practical in the way that they outline how you can create a culture where volunteerism will be raised as a standard in your organization.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much for coming into the bunker here and being such a fantastic...
Man, the bunker's a lovely place, isn't it?
It is, right? Because it's because our producer, Kevin, put a TV in here, which just changed the whole decor. I'm going to change it to the man cave. I'm going to call it the man cave from now. The podcast man cave.
I like that.
Do you like that?
Oh, does a fish have lips?
I don't know, does it?
I think they do, yeah.
I think fish volunteer as well. Adam, thank you so much
for
being here.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And we'll leave all those details in the show notes. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, guys.
Well, I really enjoyed that conversation with Adam. He's such a great leader.
He is. Not only does he dress like to the
impeccably,
Yeah, and but he also speaks that way.
Yes, he totally does. And I tell you what, if I was ever going to volunteer, I would want to volunteer on one of his teams because he really does know how to inspire and recruit and mobilize all of his volunteers. So I really hope that everybody listening today got a lot out of that conversation with Adam. And I know you've read Christine's book, right?
I have. It's and
what's
fabulous.
What's a takeaway that you got from that?
Well, I think high level, just it's a philosophical just shift in the way that you think about volunteerism.
Yeah.
Like instead of putting all of your energy into recruiting more and more and more volunteers who are new, shifting your energy towards pouring into the current volunteers you have so you can retain them. Because a lot of times people leave because they're not getting enough attention or they're burnt out or they're not seeing the difference they made. And so if you can retain those that you've already trained, you actually use less energy.
Retain those that you've trained to use less energy. I really like that. That's tweetable. Kevin, put that in the show notes, please. You can obviously get the show notes at thinkorangepodcast.com. That's a great place to find all the information about all of that we've discussed in this episode and to get some social media shares. And it's also a great way to learn more about our two special guests on today's show. And obviously, we would love for you to smash that subscribe button as well, whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, whatever it is that you're listening, smash that subscribe button. Because that's a way that you can get notified about the next episode of the Think Orange podcast. There's one more thing we love people to do. What is that?
Leave us a review. We want to hear from you.
Yes, we do. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you think of the show. We want you to be able to speak into the format of this show, and leaving a review is the best way to do that. It would also be awesome if you could share this podcast with your friends and team members and leaders and all sorts of things, because we want to get the word out, not because we want this to be super popular or anything like that, but because we think we're having some great conversations that can really impact the capital C church. Don't you agree?
Yes.
Yes. Because what we really believe is that when you think the next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.